My guest today has spent more than 20 years inside the rooms where the stakes are highest, the Marine Corps, the DOD, and the broader intelligence community. She is Dr. Rhonda Farrell, Executive Advisor, Transformation Strategist, ASQ Fellow IEE Senior Member, ISSA Distinguished Fellow, and a United States Marine Corps veteran. She is the founder of Cyber and STEAM, Global Innovation Alliance, an industry transformation effort building towards 10,000 partners serving 1 million people globally across STEM, cyber, and innovation. She is also CEO of Global Innovation Strategies, where she advises enterprises on governance, policy, integration, and strategic alignment. Her work spans the full concept to field arc across policy, people, process, and platforms. From RMF lifecycle maturation at the DOD and NSA to enterprise transformation at the Department of State, DHS, etc. Rhonda has sat in the rooms where AI decisions get approved, and she is here today with a thesis most leaders are not ready to hear. Her argument is this: organizations are not failing because they lack effort. They are failing because policy, governance, process, and workforce were never designed to operate as a system. Technology scales that system, but it doesn't fix it. And in an AI-first environment, the cracks are no longer invisible. AI is the revealer. Today, we are going to trace how she earned that right to diagnose what the hidden cost of misalignment actually looks like inside high-stakes organizations and what leaders have to do now. Not in 5 years, not next quarter, but on Monday morning. Dr. Rhonda Farrell, welcome to the AI Governance Briefing.
Thank you, Dr. Floyd. I'm so grateful to be a guest on your AI Governance Briefing. I know that we are going to be able to share some gold with your audience today. It's my pleasure to serve both you and your community, Dr. Floyd.
I'm just excited as my guest today is full of knowledge. And listen, everyone, you better buckle up. You better get your notepads because this is going to be so awesome. I'm going to lead off today, Dr. Farrell, with the first question today. So you have moved through the Marine Corps, federal environments, and enterprise advisory. When you look back across those three worlds, what's the pattern you keep seeing that most people miss?
Thank you so much, Dr. Floyd. So what I saw consistently was actually high-performing people operating inside low-performing ecosystems. So in the United States Marine Corps, execution discipline is non-negotiable. In federal government, mission clarity is strongest. In enterprise, innovation and ideation is constant due to competitive pressures. But across all of these, when outcomes broke down, it wasn't because the people, the workforce, the leaders were not trying their hardest. It was because the ecosystem itself was misaligned. Policy says one thing, process may enable another. Platforms, whether legacy systems or modern tools, are configured around partial assumptions, and the workforce and the leaders left to reconcile all of it in real time. So misalignment doesn't just create friction, it compounds it exponentially. You get delays, rework, inconsistent data, and decision bottlenecks that no single function owns. So what I started doing in response was stepping back from individual performance conversations and introducing organizations and system-level diagnostics that look across platforms and people as an integrated model. And what consistently surfaced was this. The issue wasn't effort. It was that the design and incentive systems are designed to operate well within a particular operating unit, but not necessarily across the whole.
Wow. You know, it's just so much in that to unpack. And I'm going to try to do a very careful job. And I know we have such a limited time window to unpack this. So I'm going to say it in this way. Do organizations struggle because of policy, governance, and process, and workforce was never designed to operate as a system?
No, I think it's less about a single decision moment in time, and it's really about a repeated pattern in high-stakes transformation efforts. You know, we have strong strategy. We have approved policy. We funded digital transformation technologies, and still we see execution stall consistently. And that's when it becomes clear, and has become clear over the last decade plus. We're designing each component well, but probably in isolation, and never designing how they could and should function together across the whole organically, efficiently, and effectively. This is a systemic byproduct, given very laser-focused acquisition and funding, and in some cases, very limited contract scopes. So organizations can invest heavily and still underperform, not because the strategy is wrong, but because cross-functional execution pathways were never engineered in the beginning, and oftentimes by the design and through the scope of the funding model they're harnessing.
You know, you bring up such a great point. And what I'm hearing the through line in that, in your response to the question, is that effort isn't the problem. That it's not a lack of effort. And you being a Marine, I'm telling you, you know, you've probably seen more effort than most, and given more effort and pushed and coached people on effort. So if effort isn't the problem, Dr. Farrell, what exactly is it?
Ultimately, at its core, Dr. Floyd, is design is the problem. And more specifically, the absence of intentional design across and within policy, process, platforms, and people as a whole, an integrated solution or ecosystem. Each portfolio, program, or project that we field has some aspect of each of these. One just needs to weight them accordingly, given the mission outcomes that are currently being contracted for. Effort can't compensate for all of that, the lack of interconnectivity. And eventually what occurs is that dysfunction across the four and competing priorities ultimately wins. There's a tendency to end up being dependent or overly dependent on heroic leadership and workforce efforts that doesn't scale, and it ends up in high amounts of people burnout. So what I try to do in organizations is help shift the effort-based execution to more design-based performance, where results and outcomes are driven by an integrated structure, not overextension by the few.
You know, and that's so important. Thank you for your response. And what I'm hearing and deciphering is that there's a cost associated with being misaligned. So what I'm hearing is that misalignment is the greatest factor, in where you step into your client situations, the first thing you start to analyze and diagnose is how is everything aligned, right? And then you're looking for those gaps so that you can identify where those gaps are and help or start to see where they are misaligned so that they can become more efficient, not because of the lack of effort, but because of design. Looking at the design, you know, looking at every node, every entry point, every exit point, every point of failure, and aligning those up for success. Is that pretty much right on point?
Absolutely perfect, Dr. Floyd. Yes.
With AI moving as fast as it's moving, and I know a lot of organizations are sitting in between, you know, policy, you know, what the executive level and the processes are and the decision-making, what operations is doing, and the workforce is caught in the middle. Where does the system start to crack, in your opinion?
This is a perfect question, Dr. Floyd. So I think it cracks at the point of translation. Policy is set at the executive level and aligned to strategic intent. But process oftentimes lives in operations, where the work actually gets done. But oftentimes there's no deliberate bridge between the two, from initial kickoff of a program or a project all the way through sustained execution. So the workforce ultimately becomes the translation, and translation without structure introduces variability. But it's not just variability in interpretation, it's a variability across the people and the platforms as well. Different teams interpret the same policy differently. Different roles make decisions based on incomplete or inconsistent guidance. and platforms, whether legacy systems or new technologies, are often configured without full alignment to policy intent or process reality. The result is fragmented execution, and thus the variability compounds across the ecosystem. It may show up as inconsistent outputs, conflicting data, delayed decisions, and rework. And over time, the inconsistency erodes trust, slows speed, and degrades quality, often without leaders even being able to pinpoint why or root cause. What I've learned to do is design and implement in response that are based on traceability models that explicitly connect policy to specific process steps to accountable people, people to the platforms they use to execute and enforce the decisions. Because in practice, this means that policy must show up in a real workflow step owned by a named individual or role and reinforced through the systems that they operate in. Now, when you can help organizations establish that level of traceability to the results and outcomes they stated they wanted to achieve up front, two things happen immediately. Okay. First, gaps surface much more quickly. Policies with no execution path arise and are made visible. Processes with no clear ownership and platforms misaligned to both. Second, variability is reduced because interpretation is replaced with intentional design. And that's where execution ultimately starts to restabilize because the ecosystem is no longer relying on translation to function.
You know, you're drawing a real sharp line between compliance that's performative and compliance that's functional. Now, if you're an executive or a leader or a teams or even in governance, is there a cost or a danger in not understanding the difference inside their own organization?
There, and it's huge, Dr. Floyd. Thank you for pointing this out, because it's really ultimately where the decisions get made. If compliance simply lives in documentation and reporting, it's performative. If it shows up in how decisions are actually made and enforced and embedded across the life cycle, then it's mission functional. Why does this matter so much? It's because performative compliance can create a very big false sense of security for both leaders and organizations. We see it oftentimes in our cybersecurity and our privacy-related compliance activities, saying that we're secure because of a scan outcome versus baking security in from our design, development, and fielding lifecycle overall. So what I've done to help combat this is to embed compliance into design and decision workflows and checkpoints so it becomes part of the execution continuously, not something we're reviewing after the fact.
The whole time you were going through that and you were talking, I just kept saying, I said, my, I wouldn't want your job for the world, because just imagine the hot mess that you enter in, that you have to go through discovery and you have to get the teams to admit that everything is a hot mess. And it's also crazy to me that they mix in AI into these environments and they feel like that AI is just some kind of savior. But I look at it in these types of situations where there's misalignment. AI is going to reveal and expose. What do you say to that?
Dr. Floyd, you are so on point and on target with that. And yes, AI is exposing huge decision gaps, right? And it's also being a forcing function, which is great because they need clarity on questions like who makes the call and what triggers AI automated actions. This ambiguity might have been manageable in legacy prior digital transformation efforts, but is now immediately visible under speed. It goes back to what we spoke about earlier. We need holistic change and improvement services to ensure successful outcomes. To drive AI awareness and adoption, it's necessary to design and integrate decision governance frameworks, clear thresholds, ownership, and escalation paths so organizations can operate at the pace that AI now demands?
So let's put a pin right there. At the pace AI demands, do you think a lot of organizations understand the pacing, how fast AI is moving and changing and disrupting?
I believe, Dr. Floyd, there are some visionaries in our global scale that are setting the pace, and they are probably 30 to 50 years ahead of us of where industry and society as a whole can even manage at this time, because it's just so beyond the pale of their reality at this stage.
Why the acceleration? What do you feel? What's the driver? Why the acceleration? I mean, you're a Marine. So I'm asking a very specific question. Is it strategic?
It is.
We want to be first?
So Dr. Floyd, you hit the nail on the head, right? Mostly everything we do is for competitive advantage. And AI, when harnessed correctly, enables us to have global competitive advantage across all of our domains.
Mm-hmm. So now I'm going to get back to this, yeah. And I'm going to tie it in.
Yes.
So you have, I mean, it's compounded,
yes,
multiplier effect, small, yes, to mid-sized organizations.
Yes.
They're adopting AI at rapid speed.
Yes.
But they're extrapolating it on top of broken architecture, broken systems, broken governance. Is that failure in practice?
Yeah. So I think no matter large, medium, or small, and of course our mediums and our smalls may not have the organizational workforce and oftentimes the internal expertise to really be able to harness AI to its fullest. And so what that broken architecture looks like, it looks like speed without control, more output, more automation, but less clarity and certainly less accountability. It ultimately erodes trust in the data that it's producing and operating on, trust in the solution or ecosystem that is fielding it, and eventually in the leadership and executive decisions behind the fielding of that, unless they're done right. What I help to guide organizations to do is instead to do controlled scaling, pilot validation, govern, then scale, so capability grows with the phased structure that you're putting in. Paramount to this is starting with the secure and compliant technology base to begin with, because that enables them to move forward more quickly and cohesively. A great start is the NIST Cybersecurity Framework, the Cybersecurity Maturity Model, and the NIST AI Risk Management Framework, and the HSPE Trusted AI Model, all of which help our executives and our leadership understand the scale and the scope, and helps them put in a phased maturation program for their digital infrastructure so that they can cohesively harness AI to scale and grow exponentially.
So you brought up a good point, and I want to flesh this out. Let's briefly talk about your work at HSPE, right? And the importance of the TAME, which is Trusted AI Model.
Yes.
Right. And there is an accessory workshop that individuals can go through to become TAME score certified. And can you talk briefly about your work and what are you doing with a project over there?
Thank you. Yes. So for those who are new to HSPE, HSPE's put together as an overlay on the AI RMF framework. It's a global organization pulling in international standards that are AI related and cohesively being able to apply them to AI scenarios and use cases. They are continuously creating digital transformation solutions to allow you not only to gamify your AI compliance outcomes, but to really cohesively partner with and create trusted, value-laden solutions for federal, local, state, commercial, and other organizations across the globe. We invite you to become an ambassador and one of our leaders in practice at HSPE.
Great, great organization, great work. I'm hearing great things. I'm seeing great things about Project Cerebellum. It's coming. It's transformed my understanding from to a community of practice now, right? Instead of a think tank. Is that correct?
correct? As they move to operationalize their trusted AI model in these digital footprints, yes, we've moved to this new operating model to more easily allow us to partner with other nonprofits, organizations around the globe, Dr. Floyd.
Awesome. So anyone can join. You don't have to be an executive. You just be someone interested or in governance and in AI and ethical use and responsible use.
Exactly, Dr. Floyd. We executives, leaders, SMEs, no matter where you're at along the AI journey globally.
Awesome. So let's pivot back to our interview. I could talk about that work with HISPE and Project Cerebellum all day because I just keep hearing more things and I love learning about it. So we're going to pivot out of this section. But before I pivot out of this section about misalignment, I'm going to ask you a question about misalignment. Were you misaligned? Early in your career, you believed strong policy and frameworks would drive performance. What changed that belief?
This question, I think, really, I realized that policy without execution is just frameworks don't drive performance, and implementation and operationalization of these supporting methodologies actually do. Early in my career, I believe that we got the frameworks right, performance would follow. And to be clear, frameworks matter very, very much. Methodologies such as Baldrige Excellence Frameworks, ProSize ADCAR model, and the Shingo model are powerful performance, organizational, and operational excellence enablers. They provide structure, discipline, and a common language for improvement. And when layered with lifecycle enabling approaches like Agile, it is really supportive of a phased continuous innovation and improvement approach. But what I saw in practice is that organizations were sometimes adopting these in form, but without fully integrating them in function. And that's where the work was actually getting done. I think that organizations can tend to overinvest in selection and socialization of frameworks and underinvest in the actual operationalization of them. So you end up with maturity models, scorecards, certifications. What happens in reality is inconsistent execution across teams, leaders, business, and operational units as they have not been steeped in to the DNA of the whole organization. What changed for me was really shifting from asking which framework are we using today to how are they showing up in the work that we're doing daily, in the decisions, in the workflows, in the behaviors. And in response, I moved to an integrated model, ensuring that the principles from Agile are reflected in actual delivery cadence and decision velocity. That's our Baldrige, aligning Baldrige performance categories to real operational metrics and leadership behaviors, embedding ADCAR into how change is experienced at the individual level, not just organization, and using the Shingo model, not just as an organizational philosophy, but as a guide for how culture and process reinforce each other. And most importantly, ensuring every policy framework or model had a clear path towards execution. Where does it live in process? Who owns it? Is it reinforced? And how is it measured? That's when frameworks stop being aspirational and start becoming operational.
Listen, audience, this is tremendous. With me being a social scientist, trained social scientist, and what Dr. Farrell just outlined and broke down, her transformation from behavioral-based methods to more learner and adult-centered practices. This is phenomenal because, listen, I love Marines, and you give them a problem, they will adapt and overcome, and that's what you did. You strategized and you pivoted. So to organizations out there who are looking at policies as the behavioral change, adults don't learn that way. Yeah. Adults, absolutely, there's empirical evidence, over 50 years of empirical evidence that stated that fact. And you just heard it out of our trusted friend here today, Dr. Farrell, who just said it, right? You have to pivot from behavioral base. The policy is not going to make things better. More trainings is not going to make things better. It starts with mindset. And we could talk in agnosia about that. So we're exiting out of that portion of the show. We're going to bring it home. We've been talking about misalignment. Now we're going to talk about design shift. I asked a very hard personal question. What changed Dr. Farrell's position from behavioral-based policy training to more human adult-centered tactics? So we're going to discuss now, and I want to get into it, and this is the meat where I really like of the program today, the shift, being flexible. Leaders must be flexible. AI is just moving so fast, right? You can't be rigid, right? You think you have it, and then you don't, and then you come to next week, things change. So a constant, I think the way a lot of people put it is that you don't have a fixed mindset. You know, you have a continuous learning mindset, not getting into all the details of that. But leading up to my question, okay, and let me stop my rambling. Let me lead up to my question. Okay, today you have argued leaders have to move beyond oversight and into systems design.
Yes.
What is the mindset shift that has to happen?
Thank you. So I think they have to move from managing components to building bridges across and through the digital transformation lifecycle. They need to design cohesive integration points, not just trying to optimize individual parts of the whole. Most leaders are trained to manage vertically, policy in one lane, process in another, technology or platforms in another, workforce somewhere in between. But execution and operationalization doesn't happen vertically. It happens horizontally across those integration points. And that's where the biggest pain points, challenges, and unrealized opportunities exist. The shift needs to go from asking which element is performing the highest to asking how do these holistic elements within my organization unit operate and interact under real conditions, especially when under pressure, which AI puts us under more and more. Mm. Without that shift, the leaders can unintentionally optimize parts of the system while completely degrading the whole because no one is evaluating the co-joint impact of the decisions that are being made. So we can improve efficiency in one function and simultaneously create bottlenecks, delays, and put large risk in another portion of the organization and not realize it until performance starts to break down. What I've done with executive teams is reframe decision-making around system impact. Every major decision is evaluated for how it affects policy, process, people, and platforms together. We introduce integration checkpoints before initiatives move forward. And we ask explicitly, where will this create friction? Where will this require translation? And where are the interdependencies? I also push leaders to think in terms of interactive design, not just organizational design, because org charts don't execute. Integrated operational units do. And in practice, this means clarifying decision rights, designing handoffs, ensuring platform reinforcement, and involving the workforce early. When leaders make that shift, something important happens. They stop reacting to breakdowns and they start re-engineering for alignment up front. And that's when performance becomes more predictable, scalable, and resilient.
Scalable, predictable, and resilient. Did I say those in order correctly?
Yes.
Why is that order important?
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I love that. So you're right. It's going to be a phased approach, right? So if we look at what enables scalability is likely predictability and resiliency, right? So they're all interoperable, if you will. You can't get one without the other, Dr. Floyd. You nailed it.
Now, here is where the wake is. AI governance as a field, 3 years old, maybe. So there's not a lot of predictive power yet. Predictability, not a lot of evidence. So how important, in your opinion, is making sure that you consider everything case by case and to build your own models based off of your cases.
So I think, Dr. Floyd, you're really speaking to a digital transformation life cycle overall. And I think we don't, you know, some will say we've never been here with AI. And I would argue the point that, yes, we have with multiple digital transformation efforts over time, right? If we could go from mainframe to mini and MIDI and enterprise integrated solution, if we can then move to cloud solution, if we could move from very large scale telecommunication towers to smaller footprints that's faster, cheaper, better, right? We have the technological know-how. It's our organizational application and reapplications of the lessons learned over the decades that sometimes gets in our way, right? What can we learn from the prior technological cycles that we can lift and shift today and apply, right? Because they're not new. The innovation cycle isn't new, right? The way we operationalize within organizations is not new. The core building blocks of AI, not new, right? But for those who haven't seen it in that form factor before and the rate of speed of innovation and scale and growth that it enables, that's the fear point for a lot of leaders and the workforce at this stage, Dr. Floyd.
You come across leaders and teams, I can't imagine the weight and how overwhelming a lot of them may feel, right? And the fear and the uncertainty. If you were to break it down and chunk it into bite-sized pieces, pieces that can be handled and easily executed. If a listener right now who's a leader wants to act on Monday morning, you said one critical policy and map it all the way to execution.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Walk us through that for that leader who's listening today.
We just had a brand new national cybersecurity strategy. So let's just take one critical policy, just one, that strategy, understand how it's going to impact our policy framework and trace it all the way through execution. We don't look at it in isolation. We look at it as a system interaction. We start with the basic. Where does this policy, that strategy and the policy implications actually show up across the organization? We can trace them, right? AI now enables us to trace them down to the operational process where we're implementing those strategies within, that policy within. What is the specific workflow step that these are reflected in? Mm-hmm. Then go deeper, right? Because really what they need to understand is who owns that step, what decisions are being made in the moment, what happens if that decision is unclear or delayed. Now extended across the whole ecosystem, what upstream inputs are required for that workflow step to work? What downstream impact occurs? Because that decision that people are making from a policy level have effect on many other teams within the organization, internal and external. What platform or system is actually enabling that policy business rule to enabling or constraining in action that policy business rule? Mm-hmm. Because this is where most leaders miss the point. They can point to the policy, they can point to the process, but they haven't necessarily designed the interaction points between people and platforms that allow a holistic decision to be carried forward. If you can't trace that policy to a decision made by a real person in a real process supported by a real platform, that operationality doesn't exist yet. So this exercise immediately can help them surface gaps. Policies that have no execution path, processes that have no clear ownership, decision points with no defined authority, and platforms that don't reinforce the intended strategy and policy intent. It reveals where the systems are relying on human translation instead of integrated design. So what I typically do with leader and executive sessions is walk leaders through this live. Within hours, they can see where breakdowns are happening, not in theory, but in execution. And from there, the conversation typically shifts from what should we be doing to where do we need to redesign the ecosystem so this can actually work going forward. That's the Monday morning move. Not more planning, but targeted redesign at the point where execution is actually breaking.
You heard Dr. Farrell today. She said, not more training, not more training, more planning, more understanding.
Yes.
More thinking broadly in a scopatory about your problem. And I'm going to say it in this way, the battlefield, right? Your organization and where are the gaps, understanding all of that. And then coming up, stair-stepping or step-by-step, what is the risk assessment and then what is the mitigation? And then walking those down. And it's a process. So it's painful. It's transformative, but you've seen it work, correct?
Exactly. And so again, it was an earlier conversation we had about how do we create a culture where we're focused on the unrealized opportunities that will get our executives and our leaders and our workforce to take the plunge, so to speak, on diagnosing and recommending and realigning our risks to more results and outcomes to achieve what's on the table, the opportunity that's on our tables with AI.
What determines whether an organization leads or fragments from here?
I'm going to say, Dr. Floyd, it's going to be about the clarity of their decision-making under pressure. And it's going to include policy, process, people, and platforms. Why this matters so much is that pressure doesn't break solutions. It reveals them. It reveals the bottlenecks. It reveals where we are unintegrated. It reveals where decision rights are unclear. It reveals where processes are not in alignment. It reveals where platforms don't even support the mission work. And most of all, where the workforce is left to overcompensate and overcome. The organizations that will lead and win are the ones that have already done that integration work so that when pressure hits, decision rights are aligned timely and executable during fast execution change. Because in this environment, it's not the best strategy that wins. It's the ecosystem and the teams that can consistently turn decisions into action and execute flawlessly under pressure.
Thank you for that. And I hope everyone was listening to what Dr. Rhonda broke down to us today. Execution, execution, execution. You can execute if you plan properly. And if you plan properly, it's because you have the right mindset. Or as she would say, a mind shift. I've been hanging around her a little bit, so I'm realizing I'm falling in love with her language. Is the mind shift. That's what is important. And that's what we're talking about today, is that entire mind shift. We talked about earlier in our conversation today what shifted her from one approach to another approach, from policy and frameworks, right, behavioral type things, to her approach now. And it's very important to understand and not to internalize it without actualizing. Let me say that again. It's important not to just to internalize it, but to actually actualize that. When you have leaders that are faced in these situations, especially when everyone is looking, you're the one who wants to do something, but everyone's panicking and are so afraid of AI. Listen to our conversation today and just say, you know what? They were right. Dr. Farrell wants you to do a CTA, a call to action. Talk about an initiative, a project, something that you're working on currently, where our listeners can follow your work, how they can get involved.
You can follow my work on a weekly Spotlight on What's Next 2026 series on YouTube, where I help executives and leaders turn complexity into clarity and build systems that perform under pressure. I also have a co-joint weekly cyber offering entitled Cyber Advantage 2026, Risk Readiness and Strategic Control, also on YouTube. I publish regularly about thought leadership on Govloop, where I address real-time challenges facing government and industry leaders across AI, cybersecurity, enterprise transformations, and the workforce. And through my work with AFCEA International, I've contributed to and led the development of white papers, including Securing Smart Cities in the Age of AI, and Cybersecurity for the Frontline, which focus on governance, cyber risk, and workforce readiness across critical infrastructure with the focus on AI. Through American Society for Quality and our HISPE partners, we do webinars and leadership forums. We engage with global audience on excellence, governance, and innovation. And across all of these platforms, the focus for our audience is consistent, helping executives, leaders in the workforce design AI and other digital transformation systems that don't just look good on paper, but actually perform when it matters most. I welcome you to engage with me across all of these different forums. We can plug you into innovation at all of these different levels. If you want to be a thought leader, if you want to contribute to a white paper, if you'd like to be a speaker or an author, we have an opportunity for you to showcase your talents and your expertise and really get you in front of the groups that matter most to you. Thank you, Dr. Floyd, for the opportunity.
This has been the AI Governance Briefing. Govern the machine or be the resource it consumes. Dr. Tobias Floyd, signing off.